from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
It's Wednesday, everybody, on the G and Ursula Show. Good morning to you, and good morning to you, Ursula.
Good morning. I am in a fantastic mood.
Oh, yeah?
Why?
Why?
Because I was at the Mariners game last night.
Oh, okay.
And you know who I'm going to credit for that win
last night? Yeah.
Our listeners.
Oh.
Because while I was at the game, I was there first inning, and I was thinking, oh, boy, the bats are silent again.
Yeah.
And going into the second inning, I was like, okay, I need to post something. I need to get our mojo going. So I posted on the G and Ursula Show Facebook page and said, we need your lucky charms. We need your prayers. We need your positive thoughts. We need whatever it is that you have. And I'm not joking when I say that was the turnaround.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was really cool. So I just want to say thank you to the G and Ursula Show listeners.
Right. Well, I got to say right now, these Mariners, they definitely control their own fate. Last night, of course, was a big win. Ursula was in the building. And then, of course, tonight, they got to get busy, too. That's going to definitely have to happen. If it doesn't, oh, they're going to be in trouble. The Mariners need to get busy. And then we already know the Seahawks are getting ready to head out there for Monday Night Football next Monday. They'll be traveling to New York to play against the New York Football Giants. But right now, let's get to it. Top stories of the day brought to you by Wayscar 40, Susu in Auburn.
Well, I want to get a little more in-depth because it was a must-win for the Seattle Mariners. They did pull it off thanks to brilliant pitching and the bats finally coming alive. And also thanks to our listeners.
6-2 Mariners, the 1-1 Alvarez swinging a line shot center field. Going back is Julio. He's there. Leaps up and he makes the catch on the run. And the ball game is now over. The Mariners win it 6-2 over the Houston Astros. And the Mariners are just a half game back of Houston for that third wild card spot.
Okay, there were some really tense moments, though, G, including during the sixth inning, when George Kirby got hit by a baseball by one of our fans. So it was almost like slow motion when we saw this happen, and he was asked about it after the game.
I mean, it surprised the hell out of me. I thought it was umpire because I had my hand up, like, asked for the ball. I thought he threw it. I mean, it was an impressive throw. I'll give him that, but, you know, like, what the heck?
Okay, so it was a foul ball. It was a kid. It looked like a teenager who caught it and immediately chucked it back over the fence. Mm-hmm. I mean, that ball just went sailing and hit him, and Kirby was not paying attention. You're not expecting the ball to come. If you could have heard the crowd and just how it just sucked the energy out of that stadium, and people were like, are you kidding me? M's manager, Scott Service, was asked about it, and he says he never saw anything like it.
I understand it was an Astros foul ball that a young teenager took it and thought it was the right thing to do, was throw it back on the field. The fact that he threw it at our starting pitcher, and maybe that was a critical game of the year, interesting.
Okay, interesting. I mean, we were going through all sorts of scenarios. People in the stands were like, are you? Because everything kind of changed. The momentum changed. Mm-hmm. Then Kirby got, retired. And then the next pitcher, and okay, I'm sorry, I'm not a sports analyst or anything, but it seemed like the next pitcher struggled for a little bit, but then came through, and it was all good, obviously.
Did he fall?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah,
I'm no, just but still, I mean, I think it's, you know, you get beamed. You're not expecting it.
Right.
And then it changed. I mean, things changed.
Okay. All right.
And then he ended up leaving the game afterward. But, I mean, just the idea that obviously this kid wasn't thinking.
No.
I mean, it was just a...
It's like,
and the kid had an arm, I will say.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. Anyway, the good news is the M's are just a half game out of the final wild card playoff spot. Behind Houston. They're going to be playing tonight. So I guess tonight is the real must win, must win, must win. Right, Chef?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
so we're going to be nervous.
I don't know.
It feels like
following cryptocurrency, following the Mariners over the course of a season where you're like, when do I buy in? When do I sell? I literally had to explain to Matthew the other night how the playoffs work. And he's like, well, what's the World Series, Dad? I'm like, oh, that's the championship. But the Mariners are the only team among 30 major league teams that have never been to the World Series. And he's like, what? All right, buddy, welcome to the culture. Here it starts.
But for anyone who thought, okay, there's just not that excitement, Felix and I were talking about that yesterday. Like, you know,
Felix Hernandez?
Felix Fennell, who was here yesterday.
Oh, okay. I mean, we talking Mariners. You said Felix.
But so yesterday, he was asking, like, is there just not the same level of excitement as there was last year? I mean, the stadium was full. Mm-hmm. So I think people are just trying not to get their hopes up. But I'm counting on our G and Ursula Show listeners to make it happen again. And so that we'll be talking and be in a good mood again tomorrow. Okay, it is one of the top trending stories this morning. Target is now closing two stores in Seattle because of rampant organized theft and violence against its employees. The store on the Ave in the University District and the one in Ballard on Market Street are going to be shutting down for good on October 21st. Mark Johnson is with the Washington Retail Association, and he tells Cairo 7 TV he's not really surprised because this kind of theft often has few consequences.
If you steal from a retail establishment, the chances of being apprehended are low. The penalties are low. The reward is extremely high. You can monetize these stolen products very easily and fund your criminal activities.
Target also announced that it's going to be closing three stores in San Francisco, three in Portland, and another in New York's Harlem neighborhood.
Is it theft or is this the new normal? You guys remember that used to be a thing that we talk about, like, prepare when we come out of this pandemic, there's going to be a new normal, the new normal, people working from home, new normal. Some of the big chains of stores aren't what they used to be. Our buying habits and how we buy things. Some of us are choosing to do Uber Eats and DoorDash more so today than we ever have. Do I believe theft is an issue? Sure. I believe theft has always been an issue, but I'll tell you what's an issue, and I'll just speak for myself when it comes to buying habits and buying patterns. I think that we are a microwave society. Like, everything is fast now, right? And once you've had it fast, you don't want any change. So when you do say, I'm going to go into the store really quick, when's the last time you've been in the store and you're in the store and you're just mad because there's only two lines that are open?
But there's
seven or eight of them, but there's only two open, right? And you're standing in this long line to buy this one thing, and it's taking you that long. And it's almost like before you buy that, you could go on Amazon, purchase it, and it'll be at your house before you get home. I'm being sarcastic with that, but I just want to say, I think the reason why we will continue to see more stores, big stores like this close, is because of our buying habits. We don't buy like we used to.
I think that you're exactly right. And obviously Amazon, Walmart, and all the online stuff, that has kind of made it basically a graveyard for a lot of brick and mortar. However, Target is kind of taking this unusual tack, and I say unusual because a lot of times these stores, when they close, they bring up different things, like, for example, more people doing online retail.
Sure.
Or they will say that it's the supply chain, or it's, you know, it's other things. But in this case, Target specifically said organized retail crime at the stores and violence against their employees. Now, the two in particular in Seattle, and mm-hmm. some people, as you can imagine, are having a heyday. See, it's these liberal, you know, hellholes, blah, 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 blah. I've been to the Target numerous times on the Ave. When it first opened, and in fact, I went there when it first opened. I was like, man, why? Because there used to be a Payless there. If you've ever been there, it's one of those. If you go to the Ave or you go to the U District, the parking's almost impossible, first of all. Mm. Secondly, at night, yeah, you know what? It's running the gauntlet. I mean, you are, it doesn't feel very safe. So I will I will believe that, you know what, organized retail crime, they gave specifics. They said that for Target, their shrink, which is what they call what they lose when it comes to theft, overall is expected to reduce their profitability by more than $500 million compared to a year ago.
Yeah.
So theft, we talked about it yesterday. You weren't here, but retail theft nationwide costs $112 billion worth of losses. So it is a problem.
Right. When we talk about retail theft, is it fair to say that most people, when they think and talk about retail theft, that most people have an image in their mind of someone running into the store and taking things out of it?
Yes.
You know what never comes up? Employee theft.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is absolutely true.
You guys
yeah.
want to talk about that? The increase in employee theft. And why are employees stealing?
Because it's cheaper than to, I don't know. Everyone has their different. I worked retail for years and years and years. Employee theft was an issue then, too. But this organized retail crime where people are selling this stuff online to whether it's feeding their habits or just, hey, that's the way they're going to make their money. And in fact, Heather is going to join us and give us more details about that. But organized retail theft is a huge thing. And the online marketplace has helped it.
Can I call shenanigans on this whole story, though? I understand retail theft is a problem, and it's probably a problem at every Target. But here's the deal. I had no idea there was a Target in Ballard. I had no idea there was a one on the Ave. And by the way, these are not Target stores like you think of a Target store. These are tiny. If you look at the Google reviews for the Ballard store, go ahead and go through them. Worst Target I've ever been to. No bathroom in the entire building. Limited inventory. Limited selection. Not really a retail location. It's not really a full Target. Every visit here has been unsuccessful. Just go to Fred Meyer. This Target is by far my least favorite Target ever. Perhaps, just perhaps, the tiny Target concept is not a successful one.
It isn't, because you can just go to the one at Northgate, which
yes,
is not that far away,
store.
And it's thriving. Exactly. So in any case, we wanted to make sure that you heard the other part of the story that you might not hear on other shows. Okay, as long as we're talking about money, though, there is this new study from the University of Washington that says one in four families locally is robbing Peter to pay Paul, essentially, and still can't afford to cover their basic needs without government help. This research shows that in some counties, like, for example, on the Olympic Peninsula and some in eastern Washington, the reality is even more dire. These researchers say up to 40% of families are struggling to just afford their basic needs. The researchers looked at the cost of housing, childcare, transportation, health care, food, and other essentials. And they say this growing economic insecurity in the region is because we have seen such a big increase in basic living expenses, and they also blame the lingering effects of the pandemic.
Are any far left policies right here when it comes to one in four people not being able to afford basic needs? This has been a problem, and it continues to be a problem. But this is a problem that most people don't care about, because as long as they don't see it, as long as we don't see it, it's not addressed. I was coming in this morning, and I was actually, when I got in this morning, I finished reading up the article right now. Did you guys know, and this has nothing to do with the state of Washington, but I'm going to come back to the state of Washington in a sec. The state of Alabama is going to spend $1 billion for a new prison that's getting ready to come up. It is right now said to be the most expensive prison ever built in the United States. Yes. It comes out to be $270,000 per bed. Let me say that again. $270,000 per bed for prison. What this is going to be worth. Now, I'm quite sure there's a lot of people like, yes, that's what we need. We need to continue to build these big prisons because we got a lot of people that are committing crime. To which I say, and which I've been continuing to say, by the way, not all crime is because of poverty. I just want to say that. However, I do believe that we can hit a decrease in poverty if we address situations where we have one in four people that can't afford basic needs. Maybe that person doesn't go automatically to drug dealing. Maybe they don't go automatically to robbing someone's home. But maybe they start off with stealing from a grocery store, right? Because they don't have the groceries to feed their kids or their sons in that case like that. So this problem, Ursula, is continuing to get worse. And back to your top story with the Target, with Targets closing, right? You have people that will be without jobs. So that's more people that will add to that equation. And then you have the cost of living here in this town, which will end up adding to the homelessness crisis. So everything connects.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a couple of things that came out of there, because some people say, well, you just need to work hard. You need to go get a college degree. So about 80% of the households that are below what they call this self-sufficiency standard, where they don't need help, they have at least one working adult, and 60% have at least some kind of college credit. So the researchers say, okay, this is not because of a lack of effort. It is also different depending on gender and depending on race. About half of the white men in our state who don't have a high school diploma are below the self-sufficiency standard, but the same percentage of women of color who have a diploma or some kind of college credit are below that standard. So that's something to consider. And the other thing that was a big one and an eye opener, the researchers say, we have been calculating these numbers since 2000, and we find that the cost of childcare alone on average has gone up by 171% in the last 23 years in comparison to earnings that have only gone up, well, by 60%.
But we'll spend our time here talking about them gas prices, don't we? We don't want to talk about the child care and how that has been continuing to increase and how there is no help when it comes to that. People are struggling. That was a very good numbers there, Ursula. Appreciate that.
Oh, that was straight out of the University of Washington research.
They did their research.
They sure did. Okay, still ahead. Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell has now responded to comments that were recently heard by an officer who was in a beef with his Chinese American neighbor. He responds to that. And then also, we're getting new details about a controversial decision regarding police body cam video. We'll have that next, coming up on the G and Ursula Show. The G and Ursula Show. Did you know that there are some new phone etiquette rules?
Or really?
When it comes to, when you can call somebody and when you should text them. I didn't know about this, but we're going to talk about it in about 15 minutes. Mm. But right now, we need to talk about what our Seattle mayor has said in response to the second reported incident of an SPD officer using inexcusable language in recent weeks. We're now learning that at the same time, SPD has also quietly gotten rid of a program that would monitor what officers said on body cameras. So on Friday, just to catch everybody up, The Stranger released this recording of Officer Burton Hill using racist and sexist slurs against his Chinese American neighbor. And at a news conference yesterday, Mayor Harrell said the language was unacceptable.
Those comments make me incredibly sad and incredibly disappointed. So to our police officers, I join communities across the city in saying, you're better than that. We expect you to be.
The mayor also said, sadly, we have seen, this is a quote, trust fractured through recent events where officers have disrespected or dehumanized our neighbors. That is a quote. So this morning, the Seattle Times is reporting that SPD quietly canceled its contract with a Chicago technology firm that uses AI to monitor officer body cam footage for patterns of problematic behavior. I didn't know this exists, but in January, the same technology was praised by SPD's director of analytics and research, saying that Trulio's body cam monitoring technology was promising and thought that it should continue to be used, and a two-year contract was renewed. But now we're finding out, according to the Seattle Times, that less than a month later, after SPOG President Mike Solon complained, he said the technology was spying on officers and violating the union's contract, SPD's chief of operations, Brian Maxey, ended that agreement with Trulio. So I want to get your thoughts before I continue.
Zebras don't change their stripes. Let's go back to 2017, where the police union challenged and filed an unfair labor practice complaint when during that time they wanted it to be known that it was a clear violation of state law to have body cameras. They were against body cameras during that time. And then here we are present day. They don't want the same thing. Guess how we find out about some of the wrongdoing in police culture? Most of the time it's coming either through some type of video and or body cam. And or we just recently have when a situation where you had the phone call between the vice president of the same organization, SPOG, was talking to the president of SPOG. So where do I come out away with this? I think they stopped it because it was going to be too much. I think they stopped it because we have a problem in this country and here locally with recruiting and all of those things. And I think it's one of those things where it's kind of like me on a scale, Ursula, and I'm not trying to be funny. Sometimes I don't jump on a scale because I don't want to see the number. And in this case right here, I think this is a situation where they're like, whoa. Oh, AI? AI does not, it's not going to be subjective. AI is going to see and talk and do exactly what it is, what it sees. So I think they said none of that, Ursula.
Well, the thing that's interesting is that in January, again, it's considered, you know, something that is promising, that is a quote. You renew the contract. You're thinking, okay, this could help us because we have these issues. And I think for the protection of the officers and for the protection of the public, it would be helpful. I mean, we keep talking about body cams. And in my opinion, I think for the public, especially given what we're dealing with right now, I think that we need to have that information available. Now, I understand just from my conversations with officers that they feel like it is too intrusive, and that has been one of the big sticking points in the contract. But now, given this, and we have to say that SPD ended that contract with this monitoring company less than 2 weeks after Officer Dan Otterer made those comments about the 23-year-old woman who was killed in the crosswalk. At the very least, this looks awful.
Yeah, it does. It does look awful. And I think it looks awful, and it will continue to look awful. You know, Ursula, we've been doing this show almost 4 years. And when we talk about all the different topics, here's something that I have learned. I have learned that as we talk about these things, as we try to get to the bottom of these things and talking about them, it feels like it is safer to continue on with narratives than it is to truly get to the bottom of things. So for an example, I'm going to say it real simple. Police culture here in Seattle is awful. I say that with not that police officers are awful, because I don't want people to understand what I say right. I'm not saying police officers are awful. I'm saying police culture is awful because it takes technology to expose everything that we're seeing. And even when we see them, the only thing we get is thoughts and prayers and, oh, bad boy or bad gal, you shouldn't do that again. And that's not nice. And let's let the community meeting happen. And then it's going to happen over and over and over again. And then you tell us this, how they stopped putting this service in play. Why? Wonder why they did that.
Again, the SPOG's president, Mike Solon, claimed that the technology was, quote, spying on officers and violating the union's contract. Right now, if I were Mike Solon, given that he is in the midst of this other thing, I would find perhaps someone else who could speak on behalf of the union. Right now, we're talking about a cultural issue that it's not just SPOG, it's also SPD in and of itself. The number of people who work for SPD who have talked to me who have said all of this is just making it difficult for us to do our jobs.
I'm actually sympathetic a little bit to officers on this, because these AI tools are going to be coming to your workplace. So what this technology does is it takes all of the audio, right, and provides a full transcript to the AI, and it goes through it, and it will monitor for tone, for inappropriate language, for the way you say things. Exactly. Now imagine if there was an AI tool that could go through every single email and phone call that you had placed at work, and it provided your boss with a report on how professional you are, how friendly you are. It could pull out every single instance of where you used a word that was questionable or a tone that was questionable. That would be like an aggressive level of oversight that I would find deeply unsettling. But in this instance, how can you object right now?
That's the question.
And by the way, I'm all for that at the workplace.
I'm not.
But let it be for everybody. Not just the employee, but the employers, too. Man, let it be for everybody. Right. Let's run it down, baby.
Oh, you mean like the screen time monitoring software that checks to see if you've jiggled your mouse?
Hey, Ursula, let's put a big old screen
And I have nothing to hide.
Same.
We have cameras right now. I keep forgetting.
Let everybody be on there. Oh, Floyd. Looks like all you did was spend time on Facebook for 2 hours, and we just walk in and we see it. And Floyd might be the manager. Well, I thought Floyd used to be working hard.
You don't think there would be any problem with that?
Why is Floyd getting so much money?
I love the names you come up with. Okay, still ahead. Speaking of, what are you doing with your time? There is some new phone call etiquette we need to get into.
Yeah, I don't like this. Do that next, Jenner. Happy Wednesday. It is G and Ursula. We need to talk. There's this new phone etiquette that is going on right now. The Washington Post says the rules of how you get a hold of someone are changing. According to an etiquette expert, voicemails are taboo. Just don't. Except if you want to leave someone a happy birthday message. And text before calling. You don't need to answer the phone. Now, Ursula, before you say something, two things.
You're on camera, Ursula.
I have to just remember.
I have to remember that.
My eye rolling, my just hands on face. I got to remember that's on camera.
That was good. I do agree with the voicemails. As you guys know, I hate voicemails so much that I don't even allow you to leave them for me.
I hate that about you.
Yeah. I can't stand voicemails. It's the worst.
Why?
Because it's never going to be a happy birthday. It's going to be some, can you call me? It's going to be something. You ain't got the family I got. Now, this next part, Ursula, about texting before you call, that's some old Nick Gen Z young stuff. Get the millennials. That's garbage.
Like, you have to just give an introduction, like, be ready. I'm about to call.
Hey, can I call you?
Yes.
No. Calling you if I want to call you. If you don't want to answer, don't answer. I bet you this.
Okay.
Here's the thing about people. If I call you and you're one of those that don't answer because I don't feel like it, okay, make sure when it's on the other foot and you want to get in touch with me, I'm going to ghost you forever.
Oh, my God. Okay, let's...
Everybody want to call you when they want something.
Let's reel this back in. I'm feeling like this is personal.
This is personal.
Okay, let's reel this back in for a second.
All right.
Yeah, not personal about me. I've never... Yeah, I know.
You are a phone call.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, but let's reel this back, because who wrote this article? And how old was this person?
The woke Washington Post? I'm tired of these woke folks. It's okay. The woke. The woke is ruining our society.
Okay. First of all, leaving a voicemail, I have been known to leave a voicemail that includes a birthday song. I want someone to know.
Acceptable.
Acceptable.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I think that if you call and someone sees you call, but then I see, wait a minute, they didn't leave a voicemail. It must not have been important. That's what that tells me.
Oh.
If someone leaves a voicemail, I'm listening to it. And there are times I can't take that call, especially when you have elderly family members who aren't the most technology savvy. And, okay, if they figure out they're leaving a voicemail, it's going to be important.
These rules don't apply to older people. Like, no one is expecting the older generation to adhere to these rules. But here's the thing. Like, we are so used to being interrupted in our daily lives and constantly available. We have notifications going off all of the time that anytime someone calls you, it's going to be an interruption. And people don't call you just to say hi anymore. Unless you have an established pattern of phone communication with someone, the only reason people call you is if there's A, been some sort of tragedy, or B, they really, really need something from you. Or C, they just have to get something on their off their chest. It is always an emotional imposition on the person being called. And so you say, hey, you know what? I need to talk to you. I'm going to give you a call in about 5 minutes if that's okay. But like, you can't just out of the blue lay something on people without giving them a heads up.
Okay, wait.
Ursula, you got it, man. I'm too old for this.
Sorry.
I'm too old for this.
Sorry. That feels like, okay, I hate even using the word like snowflake culture.
Oh, go for it.
But when you're talking about...
Go ahead and throw out the pejoratives. Let's do it.
No. But when you're talking about you need to be like eased into that conversation, you can't just be hit with bad news that you have to go through text first before... I mean, what have we become?
What have we become? I don't know. Maybe a nation where people feel like they need a bit of a heads up. Like, you never get bothered when your phone starts. You remember the old landline? Every time it would ring, Dad would be like, oh, who's that? Oh, who's that? I got to pick that up.
And guess what?
We're avoiding that in this generation.
Yeah, you can just let it. Then you let it go to voicemail, but leave the voicemail.
Okay, how about this? It does say don't give up on phone calls. And here's a rule I think we can all agree with. Emotions are for voice. Facts are for text. If you have information to communicate, when and where to meet, etc., text. If you want to go on a sob story or express your emotions about how you hurt my feelings or whatever, phone call.
Let me.
I kind of like that. I like that. Because then you can also refer back to the text. Mm-hmm. Go back to it real quickly. I can buy that one, Chef.
I want to go to our resident Gen Z.
Okay.
Nick. Your thoughts on getting a heads up before someone calls you?
I'm not on that side, but you know me, G. When you call me, I most like 9 times out of 10, I'll answer that phone. But if I'm busy, I'll just tell you on the phone. I'll be like, hey, I can't talk too long right now. I got to call you back, okay? But I'll still answer for you.
And if you call me and I don't answer, I feel terrible.
You get right
and
back.
I will get right back
you get
to
right
you.
Back.
Yeah.
It's these youngsters. Hey.
And what's youngsters and what's oldsters?
Right now, it's these 20-somethings. And let me ask, this is just to the parents. You parents out here. How many of y'all have kids that don't call you back? How many of y'all have kids that don't text you back?
And then you
send them a text message. Hello, are you alive? If you have sent a text message to your child asking them if they are alive,
that's me.
Because these damn kids don't want to pick up the phone. It's
one
terrible.
In particular.
Terrible. It's the problem with these kids. They don't want to answer the phone. They don't want to text back. This generation is just absolutely awful. And you know they see it. They got the damn phone in their hands 24 hours a day. You know these kids live with their phone. They
Chef,
got their phone.
Just
and
letting
for some
you...
reason, they don't answer the phone. Yeah, this is personal. Is G getting emotional? Absolutely. I'm going to take another day off for this. Coming up next, we're going to tell you what's new at 10. It's G and Ursula.